Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, May 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, announcing the new episode of the Voices of Saratoga Hospital podcast, a story about addiction, hope, and recovery at its new addiction medicine program, saratogahospital.org/voices. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. He's here to answer your questions about stroke, brain health, and other neurological concerns. Be sure to get your calls in early. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551. Brain Health, Dr. Paul Wright, and your calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday to discuss brain health is Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health, a board-certified neurologist. Dr. Wright is Senior Vice President and System Chair of the Neuroscience Institute at New Vance Health in Poughkeepsie. He has subspecialty training in stroke and cerebrovascular disease and expertise in general neurology. If you want to be part of the conversation today, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. If you wish, the number, though, is 800-348-2551. Great to welcome back Dr. Paul Wright. Dr. Wright, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me back on the program.
Well, we have plenty of calls already, but before we get to the calls, I wonder if you could just give me a little background here. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who is running for Senate, it's a high-profile contest in Pennsylvania. He's 52. He had a stroke over the weekend, but is on his way, quote, to a full recovery. What I found interesting about this, one, is guy's only 52 years old. Two, he released a video over the weekend. It was released by his campaign, but Fetterman was speaking clearly. He explained he just wasn't feeling very well on Friday, decided to go to the hospital at the urging of his wife, and he said, "The good news is I'm feeling much better. Doctors tell me I did not suffer any cognitive damage." First of all, is it common to just sort of not feel well and have a stroke? Second of all, how can you tell this early if there's not going to be any cognitive damage?
Those are great questions, and obviously we wish him all a speedy recovery and that he gets back in the campaign and functions. As to your question, is it possible for someone not to feel well? The answer is yes. It's a very nondescript sometimes that people have strokes, and they don't really know how to explain their symptoms. And what I'd like to actually bring about to the audience is a little acronym that makes things a little bit easier to sort of realize if you're in trouble. And it's BFAST. B as in balance. I feel unsteady, or I'm not quite right. My coordination's off. E for eye. In other words, am I losing vision? Is my vision blurred? Am I seeing two things or double vision? F, which stands for face. When I smile, is my face crooked? Is it asymmetric? And my arms, I raise my arms up. Does one of the arms fall down or is not as equal as the other arm? And S, which is speech, is my speech garbled? Do people understand what I'm saying or do I have problems understanding what people are saying to me? And the most important part of all of this is the T, which is time. Call 911. And from what you've told me, it seems like he did the right thing and the prudent thing, which is going to the hospital to be managed by professionals. One of the biggest problems that we seem to have is that if someone, for example, has some chest discomfort, they're already aware that they should be calling 911 because this might be a heart attack. But yet, it never ceases to baffle me that people develop weakness in a whole side of their body, but they want to wait to see if it goes away. So the message that I do want to get out to everybody is that if something is not right, especially in the acronym that I just mentioned, is seek medical care by 911 and get to the hospital.
Well, that's good advice. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Wright. And one more item in the news I thought you could comment on before we hit the phones. By the way, the number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Dr. Wright. This item crossed this morning. Stroke hospitalizations for younger adults, along with cardiovascular risk factors associated with them, have risen since 2007. That's according to preliminary research. But the chances of people under age 45 dying have dropped, and the numbers are pretty significant. Have you seen these? This study?
Absolutely. And this is a great point to bring out to everybody, is that strokes don't discriminate. And we do see strokes in the younger population. Now, part of the increase in strokes in the younger population is lifestyle, is blood pressure being elevated, diabetes, cholesterol, and in this day and age, especially with what we went through with COVID, is lack of mobility and exercise, which is a major part of what we need to do to improve our overall health.
What portion of people over 50 have one stroke and they are dead?
It's very hard to say, and I don't know the exact numbers.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. David in Albany. David, you're first.
Yeah, I've been experiencing a phenomenon very occasionally over the past 8 years or so. I'm 67 years old. I had a successful ablation for intermittent atrial fibrillation 8 years ago. And in the months preceding the ablation, I began experiencing these episodes. I want to describe them as like feeling like temporary ischemic attacks. Sometimes they manifested as seeing double or vertigo or a partial blind spot in one eye or the other. And I know that whenever they've happened, I was in sinus rhythm. I made an appointment with a neurologist. He said it was unlikely to be embolic because it keeps happening in the same places. And he suggested it was probably some form of migraine. I was wondering if you could give me your impression.
Dr. Wright.
And that's a great question. So if you're saying that this is embolic, in other words, there's a piece of a blood clot or a piece of plaque flipping off to the brain, there's a great possibility that it can go to any part of the brain, through the left carotid, the right carotid, the major blood vessels on the sides of the neck that go to the brain, or from the back of the brain. So there's more or less equal opportunity for a clot to go to any one of those areas for the most part. So the fact that it's so stereotyped each time for over such a long period of time that you're describing, and also, and I'm sure that they've done imaging, and there's really no evidence of a stroke on imaging, then you have to start thinking of alternative causes for this.
David.
So, do you have, he suggested the alternative was migraines. You know, I've never had any other symptoms of migraines. I've never had a headache for that matter. Do you agree that migraine is the direction to be thinking about this?
I do believe that migraine is a possibility for this. So, yes, it is a possibility.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. We're joined by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. We have had a very good migraine and headache doc from New Vance Health on this program. He did Nuremberg several times. And we've talked about it briefly as callers have called in. Maybe you could flesh it out in the minute or so before the first break. The connection, tenuous or otherwise, between migraines and strokes.
Well, there is an increased risk of strokes with people suffering from migraine headaches. More specifically, when you have what we would say is the three risk factors, which is migraines, smoking, and on birth control, that significantly increases your risk for stroke dramatically.
Interesting. And birth control pills are still on that list of things that could increase your likelihood of having a stroke.
Correct.
Let's take a quick break here. Dr. Paul Wright joins us from New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Our number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. He is a board-certified neurologist, senior vice president, and system chair of the Neuroscience Institute at New Vance in Poughkeepsie. And let's go now to Tim in Mount Morris. Tim, you're on.
Does the product derive originally from jellyfish, now widely hawked on television, seem to be effective for brain health?
Hello, Tim. So I'm not familiar with all the products that are advertised on television. But one of the things I always say is that when products are advertised so much on television that are not approved by the FDA in terms of medication, I always take caution to their claims, because it seems that if something was that good for brain health, then we'd have clinical trials to prove it and actually utilize these products. I always am very wary about products that people tout on television.
All right. Thanks very much. I think that was Jim from Matamoros, and thank you, Jim, for that call. The number is 800-348-2551, and we're joined today by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. I think we just lost Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. Zach, the engineer, is, he's getting a little upset. But that's all right. We'll get him back on the line. And we'll take a, we'll go to Bob in Broad Alban. Bob, you're on.
Thank you very much. For Dr. Wright, for those of us who have experienced an amputation, we chronically suffer from phantom pain that is generated in the brain. Are there any aggressive techniques to destroy that part of the brain that's creating the pain, or any other approaches to dealing with this issue? Gabapentin can be used, and it is effective to soften the effect of this.
This is very interesting, Bob. And while we're getting Dr. Wright back on the line here, he'll be back in 1 second. You have actual pain where the limb was. I mean, it hurts badly.
I have an above-the-knee left leg amputation. It was a result of an attempt to clear out an artery that didn't go well.
Yeah.
And I have regular phantom pain at least twice a month, regularly, by calendar schedule, early in the month, the first week, and then 20 days, 15, 18 days later, another episode of intense pulsing pain. It's rather annoying, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone who has a solution beyond using something like Neurontin to quiet the brain system down.
Bob, that is, you know, it's A, it's terrible, but B, it is so interesting to me that your brain can do that. Dr. Paul Wright, you came back somewhere in the middle of Bob's description of his phantom pain. Do you need an update, or did you get enough?
I heard most of it.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Bob, that you're going through this. I know that it's really disturbing to have phantom pain, and it is a very difficult situation to handle. At this point in time, outside of Neurontin, there are few other medications, and usually we tend to go to the atypical atypical medication route, like some of the anti-seizure medications. They don't also just act on the brain, but also on the nerves outside of the brain and central nervous system to help with this pain. So I would ask your physicians what other options are available, because obviously it's disturbing that you're suffering so much.
Thank you very much.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. And Dr. Wright, you know, I think you've done this show over the phone once before during the pandemic, and this is one of those problems that every now and then we'll lose a guest, but thanks for sticking with us. Zach, the engineer, got it done, and you're back on with us. Now we go to Nick in Ravenna. Nick, you're on.
Hi, everybody. It's a little weird to ask this over the phone on the radio, but it's very important. I do have one request for Medical Monday, and I really hope I'm not the first person to ask this. Can you do a Lyme disease show?
A Lyme disease show. Well, thanks for the request. We will definitely put it on the list. We have done them before, and we have done our specials on that before. This is not that show. Do you have a question for Dr.
Paul? No.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. Generally, if you have a request, it's good to just email it in and not take up the time. This is from Paul. Paul writes, "For years I have suffered from tinnitus. It has always been a constant ringing, more in my right than left ear. A few months ago, I noticed it has gotten louder. Can you shed any light or an understanding what is happening, why it might be worsening? I have been to an ENT, but he has said there's really no treatment other than training me to ignore it. I can't be sure, but I think it has gotten worse since my COVID shots. I have been using earplugs at night. Could that be making it worse?" Is this in your line of work, Dr. Wright?
It's mostly in line with otolaryngology, but I do want to make a little comment about tinnitus. Obviously, it's very disturbing, and, you know, when we hear patients suffering from tinnitus, we say, well, how bad can it really be? But obviously, it really is disturbing, and especially bothersome at night when things are quiet. Sometimes it's worthwhile trying a little niacin, which may help. Sometimes gabapentin may help. But I think that it's worthwhile at least one time, if you've not already had it, is to get an imaging of the ear canal to make sure there's nothing compressing on the nerve that's contributing to this.
Very interesting. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. What is the average age of people who come in suffering from symptoms of a stroke?
It's very hard to say what the average age is because we're seeing many individuals coming in with a stroke, and the ages really do vary from people in their 40s up until individuals in their 90s. So we're seeing a wide variety, and I think what's interesting that I really want to get across to the audience is while stroke is one of the leading causes of death in America, it actually is preventable. And I would say, based on studies, about 70 to 80% of strokes are avoidable or preventable. And I think that's a really strong message that we can convey to our population, that if you think you're at risk for stroke, you need to see your regular doctor. You need to be checked to make sure you don't have high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, and take upon yourself to make sure that if you are smoking, you have to do everything in your power to stop smoking so that we can keep you safe and well and away from hospitals.
You say 80% or so could be prevented. What makes the other 20% unpreventable?
These are individuals that have genetic predispositions to stroke that were not recognized. These are individuals with traumatic events to their neck, for example, that cause a tearing of the blood vessels that cause strokes. There are also individuals that have, remember, strokes are not only where you have lack of blood flow to the brain that cuts off the blood supply. Hemorrhages also are considered strokes. And there's types of strokes that come from ruptured aneurysms. So these are the kind of considerations that we take with the individuals that we say that there was nothing that we could do and they were not preventable.
Let's talk about what you do when someone has a stroke, and assuming that they follow that acronym that we discussed at the beginning of the show and they're in plenty of time, what do you do then to prevent it from getting worse and then make it better?
Well, if someone comes into the emergency room as soon as possible, and barring any unforeseen reason why we cannot give them the clot-busting drug, which is called TPA, we will administer TPA, which is the clot-busting drug, to essentially help break up the clot that caused the stroke. Now, obviously, if someone, this is for ischemic strokes or when the brain doesn't get oxygen, obviously we can't do that with hemorrhagic strokes. But when someone comes in with an ischemic stroke, we want to be able to administer TPA in the fastest possible manner. And we've trained at New Vance Health all the emergency room staff, the doctors, the nurses, the stroke teams in each one of our hospitals to be able to recognize strokes and do all the imaging and blood tests in the most rapid form so that we can deliver this medication. Now, also, there are situations where there is a large blood clot that's actually closed off one of the blood vessels, And that's when we have our team of neurointerventionalists, which are individuals that can go in and with a catheter or a wire, for lack of a better term, snake this wire all the way up to the brain and pull out the clot. And to be honest with you, when I've witnessed this occur with patients coming in with devastating strokes where the outcome would be death or long-term stay in nursing homes, and the team goes in and pulls out the clot, and you see these patients walk out of the hospital a day or two later normal, it's nothing short of a miracle to watch this in action.
Do you think that we talked about Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania John Fetterman at the beginning of the program, and he made a point of saying, hey, the doctors say there's no cognitive damage. Is that a common outcome when someone has their first stroke?
Yes. The brain is essentially, I would consider it like real estate. It depends on the area that is damaged or impacted by the stroke. So you could have someone with complete cognition, completely intact speech, but they have weakness on their arm or their leg or even numbness. It all depends on the location where the stroke occurred. And the fact that he was able to speak and convey these messages, it's a very good sign. And obviously, again, I do want to wish him a speedy recovery and back on the race.
Dr. Paul Wright of Nuvance Health joins us today. It's Strokes and Neurology. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Dick in Scotia. You're on.
Hello. I had a stroke about 6 years ago. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I still have a lot of lingering after effects from it. You know, my arm is weak. My body is weak, and I am always very, very tired. Is that possibly from the stroke or something else? Maybe the fact that I'm just 76 years old, that may do it.
That's a great question. I'm glad you're able to get on the call. Obviously, when patients have strokes, it's very easy to blame everything that they have and occurs subsequently on strokes. And the fact that you mentioned, well, I'm 76 years old and I feel tired, I don't think that's the residual of the stroke. And I think it's worthwhile speaking to your regular physician to see if there's anything else that could be causing you to be extremely fatigued. One of the things that I do want to mention is something we never pay attention to with strokes. And a risk factor for stroke is sleep apnea. Everybody always assumes that when we're awake, something's going to happen to us when we're awake so we can see it. But many things happen to us when we're asleep, including abnormal sleep patterns. We actually stop breathing, or we have a decrease in our respiratory rate, or we don't oxygenate as well. So anyone who comes to me after they've had a stroke and they say, I am fatigued or I feel tired, I always recommend getting a sleep study. That's the first thing. Second thing is, after a stroke, the work begins, and it's not really a passive process. So the strengthening training has to be a chronic thing that you're doing, because the moment you step back, then gravity, age, and the tightness ensues. So I'd always recommend that you make specific schedules to stay active. And if the limb is weaker, then to exercise that limb as best as you can, and to stretch specifically, because after a stroke, the limbs become tighter, the muscles get tighter. So I think it's also very important to start stretching out the limbs.
Dick.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Why do the muscles of the limbs or elsewhere become tighter after a stroke?
What happens is that many of the nerves in the brain tell the pathways to don't do something as opposed to do something. So after a stroke, we end up damaging more of the neurons that are inhibitory, that tells us not to do something. So that leads to a condition called spasticity, which is tightening of the muscles after a stroke.
Dr. Wright, I don't know if you recall, but one of our early callers was David, and he was talking about symptoms that were less likely embolic, perhaps migraines. He got disconnected before he finished. His remaining question was, is there anything you need to do to be concerned about or action that should be taken in his case? And if you need a refresher on what he was talking about, I do have a little summary here.
No, I remember, and I think it's worthwhile just following up with your physician and maybe having another image of the brain and blood vessels to make sure that everything is clear in the blood vessels and that there's no insult that is new in the brain to indicate that something has actually happened.
Dr. Paul Wright is with us today, neurologist with New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. One of the stories that you hear, success stories after someone has a stroke, is the way they come back into full vibrancy. And a lot of this, as I understand it, is the brain rewires itself. Explain what happens.
Well, as they always say, and this is kind of funny, where it just shows you how much of our brains we do not use. That's number one. I always say that with a little bit of a chuckle. But think about the AT&T network. When you open the box, you know, you see someone working in the box in the street, and you see all these wires. Well, think of that amplified a million times. So if there's a short circuit in one area, then other parts take over and reroute and actually start forming message systems to other nerves and make the connections.
Let's quick take a break here. Dr. Paul Wright joins us from New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about strokes or neurology, 800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. It's Vox Pop. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about strokes or neurology for Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Julia in Saugerties writes, I am frequently experiencing sensations of losing my breath, usually for seconds, but sometimes for a full minute or two. I often need to cough just once, feel slightly faint, my heart beats fast. I've had heart palpitations, wore a 30-day Holter monitor, and had a stress test. They found nothing. My fear is that this is an undetected AFib, making a stroke possible or likely. I'm in my late 70s, otherwise very healthy, and that is from Julia in Saugerties.
That's a great question, Julia. Sudden shortness of breath, it's very difficult to assess exactly what this is. But when you're saying you're fearful that this may be atrial fibrillation and a 30-day monitor didn't pick that up, what we're noticing is that sometimes it's worthwhile being monitored a little longer. And if there's a high suspicion, what we recommend is actually called a loop recorder, which is a small chip that's inserted under the skin that can actually monitor your heart rate for years. And if there's a high suspicion, then I would recommend speaking to your physician about that.
Would you be concerned that, yeah, there could be some AFib going on here based on those symptoms?
Absolutely.
Dr. Paul Wright is our guest from New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about strokes or neurology, Jay, or is it JJ in Pittsfield? You're on.
Just one J. Hi. My question is a simple one. Are there neural interventionists in the greater Pittsfield area or in the Berkshires that I should be aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know the distribution. But one of the great things that we have nowadays that people really don't pay attention to much are helicopters. And nowadays, we're starting the utilization of medevacs with helicopters in an extremely frequent manner. Many of our hospitals at Nuvans Health actually have a helipad on the building, so that we've been evacuating patients out really fast from rural areas into our centers. And one of the great cases that we saw was a patient that came into Sharon Hospital, and they received TPA, which what we mentioned before was the clot-busting drug, and they were taken by helicopter to Vassar Brothers Medical Center, and the flight time was maybe 15, 20 minutes, and the patient underwent the next stage, which is a thrombectomy, where our interventionalist pulled the clot out of the brain. And the patient went home 2 days after that. So while there may not be a neurointerventionalist in your region, but there'll be access to one. So if you're interested, you should call your hospital and ask them, you know, what do you do if I need a neurointerventionalist? Do you have the capabilities of transfer via helicopter?
All right, Jay, thanks a lot for the call. I have often heard, in fact, my father-in-law had several sort of silent heart attacks. He finally went into the doctor for a heart attack years ago, said, oh, you had four of these. Are there silent strokes as well, Dr. Wright?
They are. And a lot of times they're misnomered. They're TIAs, or transient ischemic attacks. And these are attacks where someone's had a small stroke that actually gets better, clinically, obviously.
Yeah.
But sometimes people have symptoms of something else, and they always say, well, I've had 50 TIAs, or I've had 20 TIAs, and they're normal. And when you actually speak to them in a more in-depth manner, you actually find out there's other things going on, and these are not ischemic attacks. So I don't always like to chalk everything up to a TIA, because a TIA implies a stroke, as opposed to something happening to someone that we just don't know what it is and can't explain it. I just don't want to throw out the term a mini stroke or a TIA.
All right, quickly, and before we get back to the calls, explain to me the differentiation in severity between a TIA and an actual full-blown stroke.
Well, a TIA is a full-blown stroke that gets better. It's not a differentiation of the size, but it actually gets better, and there's no evidence on radiology, in other words, on the MRI, that stroke occurred. So a TIA could actually be extremely devastating and gets better. And that's why we always say when you've had the warning signs of a TIA, you get to the hospital and get checked, because a lot of times, and there's a high risk in the first 90 days of having a recurrent stroke if it's not addressed.
Number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Paul Wright of Nuvans Health. Strokes at Neurology today on the program. Let's go to Glenville. Valerie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a friend of mine that had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and then also Lewy body dementia. And I'm wondering, is there a connection between the two, or are they related at all to each other? And I believe he is 64.
And that's a great question. And obviously we feel for your friend. They're very much connected and related. The differentiating factor with Lewy body dementia or Lewy body disease and Parkinson's is the cognitive part at the onset. In other words, there's memory issues and difficulty with comprehension and also maybe hallucinations, also behavioral issues right at the onset.
Valerie.
Thank you for that piece of information. Like I said, I've read a little bit about it, but certainly hearing it from someone offers some clarity.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Valerie. It's Medical Monday today. We're joined by Dr. Paul Wright, board-certified neurologist. Dr. Wright is a senior vice president and system chair of the Neuroscience Institute at Nuvans Health in Poughkeepsie. The number here is 800-348-2551. We go to lovely Keene, New Hampshire. Susan, you're on.
Hi. Doctor, I have REM sleep disorder. And when I moved here to New Hampshire from Connecticut, they took me off the medication I was using. I can't think of the name of it, but it's evidently a high-powered drug. But it worked. It worked. So now, 2 weeks ago, I had a very bad accident. You know, I threw myself out of bed. I didn't realize it until my nose hit the corner of a marble top bureau, and it's been very bad. It's getting better, but my whole face was black and blue. Anyhow, I'm trying to get to see a neurologist here, but the medical system is quite different here from anything I've ever experienced. And I just wondered, is it the same medicine that I was taking, or is there something new, or whatever?
First of all, I hope that you're feeling better, and I'm glad that you did say that you're getting better. And to my point before, what I was saying about individuals feeling fatigued post-stroke, or something's not happening right during the day, and they feel something during the day, but yet many things happen to us at night, and you essentially told us, a case in point, a REM sleep disorder to the audience is where your body, at night when you're dreaming, your body more or less paralyzes you. Your brain paralyzes you so that you don't act out your dreams. And a REM sleep disorder is where your body is not being paralyzed, so you actually act out your dreams. And they can be extremely violent. Like if you dream that you're running, well, guess what? You'll be running, and individuals fall out of bed, or individuals go as far as even to punch and strangle their loved ones. So the medication, there's really not much in terms of new medications that have been out recently, and the medications do work very well. So I would advocate you trying to get into your primary care doctor as soon as possible to get this taken care of, and I wish you all the best in getting better.
Well, thank you very much. I have seen a primary care, and I requested to see a neurologist, and I'm having a heck of a time, and they're scheduling for neurology at the end of August. Meantime, I have no medication, and I'm really afraid. I'm afraid to go to sleep.
Doctor.
I understand. What I would ask, maybe if you could emphasize to your primary care doctor if they could help you bridge the gap with the medication until you get to see the neurologist.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck. We appreciate your call very much. Number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health. This email from Sarah in Northampton. I've had twice in the past 20 years an entire left side numbness, tingling with no other symptoms, once in 2000, once in 2015. I did have a mild head injury in a car accident in 1990. Otherwise, nothing stands out. Doctors did MRIs, etc. No idea of what caused it. Do you have any thoughts? And that's from Sarah in Northampton.
Well, that's a great question, Sarah. Sometimes things occur and we can't really explain why they occur. But after head injury, sometimes you want to make sure that there's no evidence for having seizures or even migraine variants. So I would advocate that you do get checked by a physician to make sure that the brainwave test, such as an EEG, is done and it's looked at. But when things occur in such a wide time course, it might be very hard to actually find something to do that, to capture it on EEG. But nevertheless, it's probably worthwhile having that test done.
Let's go back to the phones with Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health and Heather. Heather, where are you calling from?
Little Falls, New York.
Oh, beautiful place. Heather, you're on the air with Dr. Paul Wright.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Heather.
I'm calling to ask. I have an 11-year-old daughter that has, she was born with epilepsy. And I was just curious if that predisposes her later in life for dementia or stroke or any other issue that may be neurologically created, essentially, by such a disease?
The answer is no. And people with epilepsy live long and very productive lives. So if she's well treated and well taken care of, then she should be okay.
Heather.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that answer. It was something that weighed on me for a long time.
I'm glad you asked then.
Thanks for the call, Heather. We go now to Central New York. Kathy, you're on. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Where are you in Central New York?
I'm on some mountain in Little Falls on my way home.
Another Little Falls. That's two in a row. Kathy, you're on with Dr. Paul Wright.
Hello, Dr. Wright. My question is, and thanks for taking my call, I have a circle of friends, and of the circle of friends, we've all had our COVID shots. And then within a short time after that, we all wound up in the hospital with heart issues. So two of us have arrhythmia, and one of us has a different kind of heart issue. But we've all been pretty healthy, and all of a sudden, this has happened. Are there related to this?
We lost a word there, Kathy. But Dr. Wright, I think you could pick up what we missed.
It's hard to say because out of all of the vaccinations that have gone out, there's really no warnings that came out and saying this vaccine may increase your risk for cardiac arrhythmia or other things similar. So I do not believe it is related to the vaccine.
Okay. Kathy, thank you so much for the call and enjoy your drive. Jeff in Johnsonville. Jeff, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey. Go
Can
ahead.
You hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on.
Every once in a while, it's happened to me probably four times in the last 7-8 months. I get extremely lightheaded, really dizzy, and my eyes get crossed on me where I can't focus. I have to close one eye and see out the other. I do have heart issues and high blood pressure.
Dr. Wright.
Yeah. And that's a great question you're raising, because obviously this is very disturbing when something like that happens out of the blue. You feel lightheaded, dizzy, and then something else happens, such as blurred vision. And what I would recommend doing is actually getting to your physician and getting checked, number one, to make sure your pressures are good. But what I'd also advocate is that, you know, we always get blood pressures checked in the physician's office. And, you know, but that's not a real environment. It's not like when you're outside working in the yard or sitting at home on a computer. So I would always advocate checking pressures at home or even getting an ambulatory blood pressure monitor to see if indeed there are fluctuations in your blood pressure over a 24-hour period. It's also very, I always recommend to my patients that when you do, and if you do have a blood pressure monitor, when you go see your physician, bring the blood pressure monitor with you so you can check your pressure with your monitor while the doctor's doing it on the other arm at the same time to make sure that it is accurate and correlates with the pressure. So I would advocate getting yourself checked.
Jeff, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Quickly to Albany and Colleen, you're on with Dr. Paul Wright.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I have a 2-year-old grandson. He was tested for autism. They say no. He has extremely delayed speech, maybe has 5 words. They said the only thing is that he has delayed speech, and to get a speech person. I was wondering if maybe something happened along the way in the past 2 years. He progressed normally for all his other checkups.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not a pediatric neurologist, and I can't comment on the development of that time.
Okay.
All right, Colleen, thanks a lot for the call. This email is a good one, doctor, and this goes through my head, about 13 times a day. Should someone who thinks they are having a stroke quickly take an aspirin?
That's a great question, because many times people think that they're having a stroke. They have the BFAST, you know, they have either balance issues, double vision, face asymmetry, arms, that are asymmetric, or their speech is slurred, and say, let me run and get an aspirin? The answer is no. The answer is to call 911, because remember what we said. Most strokes are ischemic, where there's a lack of blood flow to a part of the brain. But there's another 15% approximately that are hemorrhagic strokes, where a blood vessel has actually burst. So you don't want to be taking an aspirin if there's a possibility that your symptoms could be due to a blood vessel that's burst.
All right, that's a very good answer. We only have about 90 seconds or so here. This email from Truckee, California. Ethan writes, have you ever come across normal pressure hydrocephalus in patients, and can this condition also appear as a stroke to a patient and caregiver?
So briefly, we come across normal pressure hydrocephalus quite frequently. The differentiating factors between that and a stroke is that a stroke is essentially how it sounds. It's a stroke. It happens immediately, like you're struck. Whereas normal pressure hydrocephalus, the symptoms come on gradually from months to even years.
How much time? Now, we've talked about BFAST at the beginning of the program, and maybe quickly you can run down what they mean again. How much time between the time you're having a stroke and the time you get care before there is permanent damage done?
It varies significantly, and what I would always recommend is you just want to get to the hospital as fast as possible, because every second you do lose, you've lost brain cells. And the more time that's spent by not getting to the hospital, the more of a chance that you will not return to normalcy. So, and going back to what we mentioned, it's BFAST, balance, eyes, in other words, lost vision, double vision, F for face, smile. Is there an asymmetry to your smile? A, arms. Does one arm drop when you hold your arms out? S, as in speech. Is the speech garbled? If you're not sure, say today is a sunny day. Is it garbled, or did they not understand what you were saying? And then T, call 911.
Dr. Paul Wright, that's a good spot to leave it today. Thanks again for being with us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, honoring founder Jim Cusack, continuing his work for over four decades and four generations, helping the chemically dependent and their families battle addiction. VillaVeritas.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Paul Wright of New Vance Health for joining us today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the terrific questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our long-suffering engineer. Nate Scheid. Well done screening the call, sir. Thank you for stepping up here today. Tomorrow, we'll talk climate change and emerging energy technology with Dan DeLurie. That's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that one. Stand by now for the Media Project.